Bethany.
And I'm Joel.
And this is Sunday School Cinema, which is once again belated, and sorry to our 20 fans.
Yeah, we'll see what it ends up looking like through the rest of the summer. We were just discussing scheduling, and it's probably going to be kind of rough, but we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, you want to get a little closer to the mic there? I think you're not quite, yeah.
Hello? That better?
Perfect. Okay. So yeah, we'll see how it goes. But here we are today, and that's the important thing, in a stuffy little room, which is also something we're going to have to think about, because although my house is air conditioned, it's really just out there.
Yeah, and you can't really have an air conditioner running while you're recording anyway, from what I hear.
Yeah, because of our fans relying on our tremendously impressive sound design that we do. So, you know.
So we're finally talking about Everything is Illuminated, which we first said we were going to talk about like 2 months ago now. I think it's been like 6 weeks or something like that. But we finally got to it. We're doing it.
Look, the best laid plans. What can you do? Yes, we finally got to it. We're doing it. This is a movie that I feel like no one ever, ever, ever talks about.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it's particularly remembered. I have a question for you. What service did you watch it on?
I can look it up and find out. I don't know. Why?
So, the only two places that had it available for free were the Roku channel and Tubi. And I did, essentially, I ended up doing the first half of it on the Roku channel and the second half of it on Tubi. And neither of those streaming services had subtitles for the Russian and Ukrainian dialogue for any of it. Which it's been a long time since I've seen the movie, but I'm pretty sure it was all supposed to be subtitled, or at least most of it. Obviously, some of it you've got the Alex character translating, but I felt like I was probably missing a lot, but I couldn't find a free place to watch it that had subtitles. So there's probably going to be, I don't know how worthwhile my commentary on this movie is going to end up being.
I feel like mostly that means you missed a lot of the jokes. Like, a lot of the funny stuff of Alex translating is his grandpa saying, like, one thing and right. then him saying something else.
Him giving the sanitized version or whatever, or just completely wrong version. But there was also a lot of stuff, like, with the old lady at the end and stuff, exchanges with her. Basically, a lot of, like, the backstory stuff that Alex didn't translate that I no idea. I didn't get any of it.
Oh, well, I think we rented it on Amazon, and it did have subtitles for the things. That's really weird and strange.
That's probably what I should have done when I realized that, because at first I wasn't sure. I was like, you know, maybe we do have Alex doing like voiceover and kind of explaining what's happening in the first scene where there's no English language. I was like, okay, maybe it's just not subtitled. But then as the movie went on, it was like more and more stuff. And it was mostly in the like serious emotional stuff. I was like, I'm pretty sure I'm missing stuff here.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. Yeah, I mean, I think I saw this movie first, and I spent a lot of time in this movie trying to figure out what it was about this movie that I was so enamored of. Not that I hated it. Like, it's fine. It's the first and only, at this point, film directing credit that Liev Schreiber has.
Yeah, which actually seems a little odd that he, I don't know if he just hasn't gotten another opportunity, or maybe he didn't like it and doesn't want to do more, but he hasn't done any more since.
Yeah, and I mean, he, you know, Liev Schreiber is Jewish and has a Ukrainian... I can see why he might have connected with this, I guess. Elijah Wood is not Jewish, but, you know, whatever.
I didn't know Schreiber was, but I guess that makes sense, the name. Yeah, I didn't know that. I hadn't thought about it, but I did look up to see if Elijah Wood was, just because I wasn't sure, and he is not. Very WASPy background for Elijah Wood, from what I understand.
Yeah. And it's based on a book that is, as far as I could tell when reading about it, it's like not a true story, but the author wrote it sort of inspired by his trip to Ukraine to find his family history. But like none of the stuff that happens in here happened in that trip. It was just like very little of it. He did have a translator named Alex, but he said he wasn't funny intentionally or otherwise. Like that there, you know, so like this whole sort of like story that plays out from it is not something that happened, but like that he used both his experience of like this sort of attempt to find his roots in this way and sort of like the feelings and stuff that this evoked to like sort of inspire this book.
That's interesting, because I had not remembered that it was this sort of like pseudo autobiographical thing. I had not remembered that the main character's name was the name of the author, which seems like a weird choice if apparently it was not actually directly based on events that happened on his actual trip. But I assume that was the case in the book as well. I assume the character was just him.
Yeah, I think it's supposed to be more like a emotional autobiography of some kind. Like there is, like it is fiction, but there is, I don't know. It's an interesting little thing. I've never read the book. Apparently the book is very complicated, and I read various things about people talking about the adaptation as being like a pretty challenging thing to adapt, and like maybe wasn't ideal for like a first-time director to take on. Like that said, it's fine. Like it's fine.
I haven't read the book either. Do you remember? There's one other Jonathan Safran Foer adaptation that we have watched, and I'm wondering if you connected the dots as to what it was.
No.
Do you remember that movie, Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close?
Oh, God. Yes, unfortunately.
Monumentally awful movie that we both absolutely hated. That was based on his second novel, which I hated that to be like, I've been kind of curious to read Everything is Illuminated ever since I saw the movie, but I hated Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close so much that it's made me like hesitant to read his books, which is probably not fair. I haven't read anything about whether or not that was a, you know, how people regard that as an adaptation or what, but yeah, that movie sucked.
Yeah, we watched it as like an Oscar cut. That was like the same year The Help got nominated, I think. That was a really war horse. That was a really brutal year. Anyway, yeah, no, I did not remember that. But it's a story of this young man who collects, the collector who collects things from his family. It's sort of this like, this attempt to sort of put together the pieces of, you know, a family that was frequently, that, you know, was caught up in a lot of trauma and death and et cetera from the Holocaust and these things. And I think we're sort of meant to interpret his collecting of these things as like, how do we like put this puzzle together?
Right. He gets, he has taken on as sort of his life's purpose collecting very like seemingly random things from different family members. We see this wall that he has of his collection of all these different people, including people who are like his contemporaries, like still alive. And it's stuff like, it's totally random stuff. It's like class rings. There's like a mouth guard, like a retainer thing. There's a used condom in one of them. I don't know where did he get that? I don't know. But at any rate, because he does this, presumably family members give him things. And his grandmother, as she's dying, gives him a pendant, which is like an amber thing with a grasshopper in it, and a picture of his grandfather with this woman that he doesn't know who she is. So I think his kind of central goal is to find the source of the picture and figure out who the woman was, because he kind of figures out that she had helped whatever members of his family had gotten out. She had been instrumental in getting them out. So the part of his goal is to try to find her and you know, show some appreciation from his family, but he has no idea where, you know, the names of everything has changed and all of the people are gone, and so it's a bit of a blank map that he's exploring, trying to find it.
Yeah, and I think she says something like, your grandfather would never have gotten out if it wasn't for this woman. And so yeah, so he goes to Ukraine, which is interesting watching now, since Ukraine had, like, I mean, when I first watched this, I'm sure, like, I knew that Ukraine was a country, but I wouldn't have any direct association with Ukraine.
Yeah, I'm not sure if they actually filmed it there or not, although there's some pretty great, you know, wherever they filmed it is beautiful. It all looks pretty great. It has kind of a, the whole thing has kind of like a whimsical filter over it that's like sort of Wes Anderson lighty, which I kind of went back and forth on whether or not that was appropriate. Like it worked fairly well for the lighter moments, and I don't know how well it worked for the, or maybe it just got kind of dropped for the more serious stuff. But it is a weird mixed bag of tones. Like the first half of the movie definitely leans more comedic. There's some pretty funny stuff. The whole thing is kind of through the eyes of and narrated by Alex, who is his translator, and along with Alex's grandfather, his guide, who is played by Eugene Hutz, who is best known as the frontman for like a punk band called Gogol Bordello. I don't know if you're familiar with them. The song that played over the closing credits was one of their songs. And I believe the band that he recruits to welcome Jonathan at the train station, I think that was the other members of Gogol Bordello. I don't know if you remember that. But he's done some other acting, but I don't think he's ever done anything this, like a role this big. But I liked him. He's like a very interesting screen presence, and like he's very charming and funny. I thought he was kind of what, as much as the movie worked, I thought it was largely thanks to him kind of holding it together and doing the tone balance thing pretty well. Because a lot of what the movie ends up being about is him kind of realizing this family history that his grandpa has and that he's involved with that he never knew anything about. He had always been a very like, the past is in the past and there's no reason to worry about it kind of person. He kind of specifically says that. So a lot of it is him realizing that his family was involved in these events that, you know, sort of coming to terms with shameful national history and that he just hadn't known. Like, there's a whole scene with him talking with Jonathan about that I think it was Jonathan's grandmother had told him that Ukraine pre-Nazis was so anti-Semitic that she thought that the Nazi invasion might be an improvement. And he was just like, I've never heard anything about that. Grandpa, is that true? Was Ukraine not a friendly place for Jews before the war? He just had no idea. And I thought he was really good. I thought he played it all very well. I would like to see him do more acting stuff, but maybe he doesn't want to. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think he did well. I think when you're talking about some of the tone stuff, like a lot of what came to mind to me while I was watching it was just like, this movie came out in 2005 and it just really feels like an early 2000s indie movie with both like the pros and cons of that. Like they're watching it now. I think watching it when I first watched it probably felt more unique to me in some ways. It feels less unique watching it now. Like it definitely feels like sort of a piece of these like this like whole bunch of independent films that came out kind of in this like 10-year period, 5-year period even. But I agree. I think that he did really good. And yeah, I mean like being, I mean, okay. To be clear, understanding is spoilers, I guess. My understanding of the end is that like it's not just like this whole national history, but like he's Jewish.
Yeah, I actually, that was one of the things I was going to bring up. Excuse me. I had very mixed feelings about that because I felt like as the movie played out, we keep getting these like scenes with the grandfather who is clearly like struggling with some memories of what's going on, and we get like flashbacks that aren't totally clear. And it seemed like what they were setting up was, oh, we're going to find out that Grandpa was a Nazi and that he participated in this slaughter of this Jewish community. And then at the end, we find out that, in fact, he was Jewish and he survived the slaughter and left his past behind to get away from it or whatever. I had kind of mixed feelings about that as a plot device of like, oh, Grandpa's a Nazi plot twist. No, actually, he was Jewish. I thought it was a little weird and I don't necessarily want to say inappropriate, but it seemed a little clumsy, I guess.
I mean, I guess I feel like I don't think it's our place to say whether it was inappropriate or not. This is another thing like similar to in some ways stuff we talked about in The Believer where there's this like struggle with like identity and what that's meant and specifically Jewish identity connected to these atrocities and all of these things. And that like, you know, it's not like The Believer in a lot of ways, but I actually think it does share a little bit of that DNA in the sense of like all of like the guilt and shame that's wrapped up and in this trauma and these things. I agree with you. I also thought that's where it was going initially. And so I don't know if it wasn't set up well, or if that was the intention. I guess I partly just felt like to some extent, these questions and these struggles around this stuff, like, aren't mine to critique. Like, it's somebody else. So, like, I would be more, I didn't really have a chance to look into, like, more Jewish responses to this sort of thing, which I know I did a little bit with The Believer. It does help in my mind to be like, okay, like, Liev Schreiber is Jewish. Like, he was presumably, like, drawn to this material for some reason. Obviously, I haven't read the book, so I don't know if it plays out differently or better in the book, or, like, more in ways that feel more cohesive. I don't know. It felt like some, like, by the time we got to that point, I was like, I feel like there's a lot of things here that I can't, that I can't and shouldn't try to tie, like, my own experiences or thoughts to. And I don't know if it feels kind of opaque or weird because it's not super well done, or because it's, like, something that isn't in my whatever.
I think I felt like the clear intention was that you were supposed to be under the impression that he was going to turn out to be a Nazi, and they had it as, like, a plot twist that, oh, he was actually Jewish. And it, I don't know, it felt having, I don't know, using something like that as just, like, a narrative device seems weird to me, and having it be it feels like a clumsy way to add to add a plot twist to the end of the movie. I don't know. I don't think I liked that aspect of it. There were I did think the guy who played the grandpa was good, although again, I didn't have subtitles for any of his language. So that may also be part of what's going on here, is I may have missed some nuances because I wasn't getting any of the stuff that he said. Which is worth keeping in mind here for everything I'm saying, I guess.
I guess I feel like I agree with you. It felt like it was being set up kind of like it was set up sort of like a plot twist. But I guess that I feel like by the end, I do think, like, it does make me curious to read the book, because I do feel like it felt a little clumsy in the movie, but I could see how it might not in the book, because I do feel like it ties really well into, like, sort of the theme, you know, this idea of, you know, Elijah Wood's character as this, Jonathan, as this, like, you know, person desperately trying to, like, piece together the past, and this person who's been trying to outrun the past. And then you have Alex, who's sort of in the middle, and that there is this whole past that he doesn't even know that he should be, like, pursuing, and, like, what he finds out and what that means for him. Like, I guess I can see it potentially playing out really powerfully in the book. I don't know that it did as well as it was supposed to in the movie, but I feel like I can see what the map might look like for it to land better. And maybe it was just, I mean, like, to some extent, like, this does seem like very intense material for a first-time director to take on. Like,
yeah, I mean, it's even just the version that we have in the movie is a pretty complicated story. It goes back across generations, and we have different. I still didn't totally I think because of my lack of subtitles here, the old woman that they met at the end was the sister of the woman in the photograph, is that correct?
Okay, yes.
I wasn't totally clear on that as I was watching. It was like, so yeah, there's I guess that's not necessarily an indication of how complicated the movie was, just that I watched it without the subtitles. But this is going to be a recurring thing here. Also, incidentally, it occurred to me, we've kind of talked and joked a lot over the course of this podcast about the high number of Holocaust movies that we have on here. And this one had not occurred to me when we were thinking about them, and because we've talked about, you know, we've only got like one or two left or whatever, and I had not thought of this one in those terms, but that is absolutely what it is. I mean, that is kind of, obviously most of the movie is set in more modern day, but that's what the movie's about.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think that after this one, the only one we have left is Amen in terms of Nazi movies.
That's the only other one that I can think of, yeah. But then again, I'd forgotten about this one, so I'm not going to say for sure one way or the other.
Fair enough. But yeah, I mean, like, that said, despite my commentary that it's a lot for a first-time director, and I think it was, I did come out of it being like, I'm a little bummed that Liev Schreiber hasn't directed anything else, because I feel like this could have also been much worse. Like, it's, like, I think it's fine. Like it's okay. I wasn't like angry that I watched it. I didn't feel like I was in physical pain the entire time watching it, which has not been something I could say about every movie we've watched for this podcast. And I do, I kind of wish that he is, but you know, it's been almost 20 years now. So maybe he doesn't want to, or hasn't had the opportunity. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know anything about the story behind how this movie got made. So I don't, you know, I wouldn't necessarily have thought that Leo Schreiber 20 years ago would have been like in a powerful position in Hollywood to get a movie made if he wanted to, that he's not in now, but I don't know.
I feel like I haven't even seen Leo Schreiber. I mean, I've been seeing him lately because like we were watching Scream movies and we were like, I've seen him in older stuff. I feel like I haven't seen him in much recently.
He's been doing that TV show, Ray Donovan, I think it's called, for whatever network that's on or streaming service. I don't even remember. But he's been doing that for like 6 years, I think, which is I think it's one of those shows that like, you know, it's not like one of the most popular shows or anything, but I think it has a pretty considerable fan base. Like people like it. I tried a couple episodes of it back when it started and it wasn't my thing, but, I believe it has a pretty loyal fan base. And I think that's most of what he's been doing for the last few years, as far as I know.
That makes sense. I guess there's some of, you know, once you get a spot like that, it gives you like a job security. And if you have, you know, don't want to necessarily be running all over the place. Yeah, I think Ray Donovan is either Stars or Showtime, but
yeah, that sounds right. He's also been in the last couple of Wes Anderson movies, which I didn't remember, but he was in The French Dispatch and he was in Isle of Dogs. So I guess the Wes Anderson, crossover, the comparison that I mentioned is, maybe there's something to that. I don't know.
That's a good point. I hadn't thought about that. I had also forgotten that he was in some of those, but that does make sense. I mean, I really like Leif Schreiber. I'm always happy to see him.
I like him too. I've always liked him as an actor. Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. The movie sort of meanders around the Ukrainian countryside and they eventually do find their way to this woman who, as Joel said, is the sister of the woman in the picture, but he's able to like return the pendant to her, and she gives him the rings, the wedding rings, I think.
Yeah, I believe it was a wedding ring. Yeah. But again, I missed some of that dialogue. So.
Well, this is the thing, is that I think, and see if anyone is actually, no one who's listening will have actually watched this, so it won't matter. But I think, and I watched this a week ago for the record, we had to get things pushed back, so it's been a minute. But I think that the woman in the picture was his grandfather's wife, and it was her wedding ring, and then she got killed. And
right, yeah, no, I believe that's correct, yeah. There's a scene where she kind of tells the story of the massacre, and I believe mentioned that she had been pregnant when it happened, and there was a whole, yeah.
So he's he's able to give this pendant to her, give this back, and she's able to give him this wedding ring that her sister had specifically buried before the massacre, that she knew something was going to happen, and she wanted this saved. She wanted someone someday to be able to come back for it, basically. So like, again, powerful concept. I'm not sure if it totally played, but like there's enough interesting pieces in there that I'm curious about, like how it plays in a different format or whatever.
I feel like it's like three quarters of a really good movie here, and it's definitely worth watching, and I suspect it's one of those movies that probably has a group of people for whom it means a lot, if I had to guess. But it's, yeah, and I think I remember feeling this way about it before. It just doesn't totally land for me.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that too. I think a lot about, like, I mean, I was interested partly because I was thinking about, like, what, again, we've talked about this in other episodes, so we don't necessarily need to spend a ton of time on it, but, like, this sort of, like, fascination that at least I had a lot of time with, like, Jewish things, partly, I think, because it was a faith that we were theoretically allowed to, like, explore a little or spend some time in because, you know, it's just Christianity light or whatever nonsense we were taught. And partly because, like, you know, the conception of God was so different than what we had been taught. And I think, you know, like, when I was going through my sort of one of my initial, I mean, around this time, I guess, I got really into like Chaim Potok and some of these like Jewish ideas of God that felt wider and like less restrictive than what we grew up with, which is a low bar, but you know.
Although, interestingly, religion does not play a particularly prominent role in this movie. In fact, this hadn't really occurred to me. Hadn't really occurred to me while watching it, but it almost seems a little odd in hindsight. Like, there isn't any discussion of like what Judaism as a religion looks like, or as far as we know, Jonathan is not particularly religious. We never see any sign of that. Which, yeah, it's I guess more the cultural side of it than the religious side of it. But it seems like that would have been an obvious, because a lot of the sort of humor of the movie comes from Alex and his lack of understanding of like Jewish people and how they, you know, are just like a normal part of the world. And it seems like that would have been fruitful ground for that sort of commentary, I guess. But they don't get into any of that in the movie. I'm curious if the book, if that's a more significant aspect of the book.
Yeah, again, I think it ends up not being so much a religious thing as an identity thing, which is, of course, one of the interesting things about Judaism is, like, you know, one of the people I'm seeing is Jewish, and, like, that is a strong part of their identity, but they're not religious at all. And, like, that's, again, like, not a thing that it's really possible to be as a Christian. Like, so the idea of it being, like, a cultural, even though, like, look, I identify as having been culturally raised evangelical, and I think you probably do too, but it's not, it's clearly not the same. Like, and so I think that was also part of my fascination with it when I was younger, is like this whole different like concept kind of.
Yeah. I don't know. Do you feel like you have much more to say about this one?
I do not, and I don't think we should push it too far with my voice. So,
Oh yeah, that's a good point. Okay.
So yeah, let's decide what we're watching next. We have 38 movies remaining. So,
all right, what is number 24?
Number 24 is The Mission.
Okay. I haven't seen that movie in a long time, and I suspect I will have very different feelings about a lot of it now than I did when I last watched it. But I loved that movie, and it also has possibly my all-time favorite musical score from a movie. I don't know if you remember the music, but it's one of the very few like movie scores that I actually listen to sometimes. Great stuff. So
yeah, no, I mean, I also remember really loving it. I would find like I think we've said once or twice before that like if Silence had been out when we were doing this group, we obviously would have done Silence. I feel like The Mission is the closest like to that in some ways.
Yeah, I mean, there aren't a lot of movies about, like, you know, missionaries from, you know, the 1500s or whenever. I don't remember when it was exactly, but there hasn't been a lot of film made about the topic, so.
So, yeah. No, I'm excited. That's one I've been looking forward to getting back to, so. And I agree. I probably will feel different things than I felt. I doubt I've watched it since group, so that would have been, you know, 15 years ago. So I'm super curious to see how that feels.
Yeah, it looks like it's not available for free anywhere except Canopy, which I don't know if you ever use Canopy, but they have the weird thing where like you have different stuff available to you depending on where you are. And in fact, Everything is Illuminated said it was on Canopy, and I went to look for it there, and they're like, sorry, this isn't available in your region.
Well, it's partly because Canopy was initially it's a college thing. Right. So like what school email address you have. Like, so like I have an email address from Skagit because I teach there. So like I have access to anything that they have.
Right. Like, and I don't have a college, but they also, you can set up your library with it, which I have the Whatcom County Library access. So it's yeah. So things often show up as being available on Canopy that are not actually, it's not like a thing that anyone who has Canopy can go watch it, unfortunately. So I'll probably have to rent it, but that's fine.
Right. It's like whoever pays for, whoever you are through, whatever access they have is what you have. So that can vary really widely depending on. So like when I went to UW, for example, and I would go to Canopy on UW, I had way more access to things than I do, you know, now.
Yeah, that makes sense.
All Anyway, well, I guess we should talk about what we've been watching then. I have been sick, so I have watched a lot of things in the last week.
We better start with you then, I guess. And last time we skipped our TV. I don't know how much of that you have to talk about, but there's some, definitely.
For sure, for sure. Yeah, so I think, so last time we... well, I guess the day we recorded, we watched Mean Streets, which I hadn't seen since whenever the first time was that I watched it, which was so long ago.
Do you remember that? For me, the first time that we watched Mean Streets was kind of an awkward experience, and I don't know if you remember what.
I do not.
So it was when we were going to Crossroads, this church that we went to together for a while, and. I don't remember if it was by coincidence or if we invited him or what, but a guy that I had grown up in youth group with, Rob, you remember Rob,
yeah,
was at Crossroads that week. I don't remember if he was just checking it out or if we'd invited him or what it was, but he was there and we invited him to come back and watch this movie with us. And we're like, yeah, you know, it's Scorsese. It's the guy who did Goodfellas. It's another gangster movie. Like, didn't really know much about it, but he was very much like he was not, you know, the sort of like film nerd that we were and definitely that we are now. So he agreed to come back, and it was definitely not the movie that I was expecting, but it was really, really not the movie that he was expecting. And it ended up being, for me at least, kind of an awkward experience watching it with this guy. But at any rate, That's irrelevant to the actual movie, but that's my memory from the first time we watched it.
I don't remember that at all, so clearly it did not make an impact on me, but that makes sense. He wasn't my friend, he was yours. I mean, breaking news, Mean Streets by Martin Scorsese, good movie. Who could have predicted?
Yeah, I liked it quite a bit more this time than I did last time. I don't know if it's just because of the lack of awkwardness or just, I was a little more in tune with it. Probably both, I guess. But really solid. The first movie he did with De Niro, and it is pretty obvious why they continued to work together. But I do have to wonder if Harvey Keitel ever gets jealous of being knocked down to supporting status as soon as De Niro shows up on scene. But
I mean, that's also sort of a habit with Scorsese, right? He has new muses every so often.
Like. Sure, but it's one thing to trade in De Niro for DiCaprio after 25 years of making movies together, but Keitel only got two. He was still like 26 and he got demoted. Yeah,
that's fair. Anyway, and then I think that night or the next day or something, we went to go watch Beau Is Afraid.
I haven't seen it yet, and I think I'm probably not going to get a chance to because it's down to one show a week, which means it's probably not going to be showing after this week.
That sucks. I'm sorry. I don't know. I'll need to watch it again. I was a little nervous because I was worried it was going to be scary. It's definitely the least scary movie that he's made.
Yeah, I haven't seen anyone say it's scary, although I think it's weird that people describe Midsommar as a horror movie. I don't really think Midsommar is particularly scary. But anyway, that's a different topic.
But like, it has a lot of like building dread and stuff, which I mean, this one does too. It's just different. I don't know. Anyway, I don't know. I gave it a 4. I feel like the next time I watch it, it will probably either go up to a 4.5 or a 5, or it will go down to a 3. I can't really tell. It did bring up like a lot of mother shit for me, which also happened with Hereditary. I spent like after watching this movie, I went down a whole rabbit hole trying to figure out if maybe Ari Aster is okay. And he insists that his parents are incredibly supportive and that's why. But he says like that it's based on like stuff in their family, like extended family, but not like. Anyway, it is hard for me to imagine someone who has a good relationship with his mother being able to make both Hereditary and Beau Is Afraid. But like.
Didn't he have like a short film before his first feature that was like, I think it was Ari Aster. I haven't seen it, but it's like a family drama thing. But my understanding is that part of the premise is that there's like an abusive, incestuous relationship going on, but it's like the son abusing his father or something like that, which is a very strange dynamic, but not something that's, you know, that That is a very messed up family dynamic. Yeah, he clearly has he has something going on with family. I don't know. I don't know anything about him, but
yeah, I mean, I can't find, like, he's, because, you know, it's not like we're the first people who've asked this question. Like, I definitely came out of Beau's Frey being like, is he okay? But, like, it's definitely, it's not like anything else. And it's definitely, like, I'm pretty sure I liked it. I'm pretty sure, I mean, like, I'm pretty sure that it will move up into, but, like, just the first time through, it was just so many things that, like, I couldn't really determine. But I am really glad that I got to see it in theaters. I'm so sorry you haven't had a chance, but it's good.
It's possible the Pickford will play it. That occurred to me because it seems like the kind of thing they might. So I might get a second chance. We'll see how it goes.
Anyway, and then a couple of days later, Morgan and I were like looking for something to watch. And purely randomly, I had been on Twitter and someone had responded to, like, what's the hottest someone's been in any movie or whatever. And someone had responded with a gif of Halle Berry in the Flintstones movie.
I think about rewatching the Flintstones movie every once in a while because I loved that movie as a kid. And now, like, everyone who's in that movie is, like, my favorite people. So I have thought about it many times.
Here's the thing. You fucking should. Yeah. It's great. Okay. Like, I was genuine because I was just like, man, we watched this movie so much as a kid, and I was like, and I remember, but like, it was one of those movies that, like, as it was playing, I remembered every single, like, frame, like, as it was going, but wouldn't necessarily have been able to pull them to mind to begin with. I definitely had a crush on a huge portion of the cast in that movie, not just Halle Berry. And I was like, but maybe this is terrible. Like, this is probably terrible, right? But no, it's fucking great. It's so fun. The set design is so fucking enjoyable. It's just like, It was really fucking fun. Like, I was so glad that we randomly went back to watch this.
It also ended up being, must have been one of Rick Moranis's last roles, right? I can't think of anything he's been in since then. And, like, you know, that guy was a genius. So. Yeah, I should rewatch it.
He's not dead, for the record. He just stopped acting to take care of his kids. I'm just saying, not everyone may know that. Yeah, no, and you were referring to him past tense.
He retired a long time ago. He hasn't worked.
I think his wife died and he retired to take care of his kids, which is a very admirable thing. He seems to be a very nice man. Anyway, it was great to see him. It was great to see everyone. Halle Berry looks fucking incredible. It was almost certainly the first time I would have ever seen Halle Berry. Probably not maybe the first time I saw John Goodman, but, like, very early. Like, a ton of these people who, definitely the first time I saw, what's his face from Twin Peaks?
Al McLaughlin. Yeah. Same for me. I think it might've been Halle Berry's first role. I could be wrong about that, but it was definitely very early in her career. Yeah.
And, like, it's profoundly silly, but, like, in such a good way. It's, like, a movie that we would... The only thing, honestly, that doesn't work super well, in my opinion, at this point, is that, like, sometimes the dinosaurs are CGI and sometimes they're not. And the CGI doesn't look good, but the practical puppets still look fucking great. So, like, you know, I mean, that's whatever. That's a very minor quibble. If you've never seen the Flintstones movie, go watch the Flintstones movie. It's fucking great. And not enough people talk about it.
It also had... Was it Elizabeth Taylor played his mother-in-law, right? Yeah.
Yes!
I don't know how that happened. Yeah.
It's so fun. Anyway, and then we went to go see, the next night, we went to go see How to Blow Up a Pipeline at the Bickford.
Haven't seen that one either. That one is also, yeah, I missed that one. I think it was only here for a week, or maybe it was here for two, but I missed it.
Fucking great. I was not, like, honestly, I didn't really feel like going out that night, but Morgan was excited, and I was like, oh, we'll go out, I'll make my, you know, it was fine. I was so glad I did. It's probably one of the best movies I've seen this year. Just fantastic.
Yeah, that's what I've heard from everyone. I'll get to it one of these days.
And then Eric and I watched Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol, which would have been where I had sort of restarted watching them to begin with because of Jeremy Renner. And look, I don't like this about myself. I wish it wasn't true, but I still have a crush on that motherfucker. I find him very charming. I know he's an asshole, but, like, no actual allegations, right? Just, like, an asshole.
Well, yeah, the fact that he was, like, it might have even been in the same year Hollywood kind of set him up to take over the Mission Impossible franchise and the Bourne franchise, and then neither of those things happened, which does not speak well for, you know, people wanting to work with him, I think.
I mean, probably true. Like I said, I'm not defending him as a person. I'm glad he didn't die in that horrible accident. But, like, I'm not defending him as a person. He's probably an asshole. I just find myself unreasonably charmed by him still. So I was really happy to have him in the franchise because, as always, I am never charmed by Tom Cruise. And so it's nice when he's surrounded by other people who I like. I still didn't, like, love the movie, but it was fine. And then we all went to go see Polite Society that night.
I don't know anything about that movie except the poster image, which looks awesome. And I've seen a bunch of people talk about how cool it is. That's all I know about it.
It's fun. It's fun. I didn't love it as much as some people. There are some things that I wish, honestly, I wish the action scenes had been a little better. It seemed a little weird to have the action scenes be a little lacking for a movie about a girl who wants to be a stunt woman. But all pretty much entirely Indian cast, some really fun stuff for sure. And it was definitely enjoyable. I would recommend watching it. And then Morgan and I were like, okay, we're going to take the whole day. We're going to watch movies. We're going to start trying to catch up on Criterion. The reason we hadn't caught up on our Criterion Challenge is because the next movie for our Criterion Challenge was A Brighter Summer Day, which is 4 hours long. And by the same guy who did, it was Edward Yang who did Yi Yi. Good movie, absolutely a good movie. He's really, really skilled. Anyway, but it was 4 hours. It took a long time. And then the next one was The Day Trippers, which was a movie I don't feel, speaking of Liev Schreiber, which was a movie that I don't feel like I had barely even heard about, and I didn't love the very end, but for the most part, pretty fun, pretty enjoyable. Liev Schreiber, Parker Posey, Stanley Tucci.
Is this a late 90s movie? Because it sounds like a very late 90s cast. I'm not familiar. The title's familiar, but I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it was 1996. And it is about this woman who... Basically, she's married to Stanley Tucci, and she finds something that implies he might be cheating on her. And her, it's like over the holiday week, kind of. And her sister is home with her awful fucking boyfriend, played by Liev Schreiber, amazingly. And like, so the sister and the boyfriend and her parents all like go into the city to like find Stanley Tucci and talk to him about this. And it is overall extremely fun. And it was a good time. So yeah, I don't know. It's up on Criterion. Then I rewatched Ever After with Ezra. No notes. Perfect. And then, we watched the next Criterion movie, which is called Osos, which is a movie directed by Pedro Costa in 1997, set in, I can't remember what country it is. Anyway, but apparently a lot of the actors are not professional actors. It's like about this young woman who has a baby. Functionally, she's suicidal, and she like leaves the baby with the father, who's kind of like a deadbeat. And it's just like people just kind of like wandering around doing stuff. Like it was interesting, but felt long at 87 minutes. So you know, it was fine. Maybe I just didn't get it. That's totally possible. And then Eric and I went to go see Guardians of the Galaxy,
which I also have not seen. I might just be done with the Marvel movies. Like, this is not like it wasn't like I hit a breaking point or I made a decision like I'm just not going to watch them anymore. I just haven't bothered to see the last two, and I don't feel like I'm missing anything. So I don't know. I will see. I may end up catching up at some point, but it hasn't felt like enough of a priority to bother. There's been other stuff I would rather see. Like, yeah.
That's fair. It's one of those things that Eric and I watch all of them, so we go see all of them. I liked it the best of the Guardians of the Galaxy movies, which is an extremely low bar because I don't like the other Guardians of the Galaxy movies. It was fine. It you know, Chris Pratt, have to keep watching him talk and do stuff, and but there was some stuff. I think I teared up once, so that was something. You know, whatever. And then Morgan and I watched a couple of Buster Keaton shorts, because Playing Check is covering a bunch of Buster Keaton shorts. Really important question for you, Joel. I'm going to need an answer. Buster Keaton, hot or no?
No. I mean, there's obviously like, there's a level of hotness that comes from just like talent and competence. So like, he's like 100% on that. But in terms of like looks, if you just saw him standing in a room, I would say maybe like 15%. He's a weird looking guy.
Okay, I totally agree. I think he looks like a wet frog.
Yeah, no, that's a pretty good, yeah.
But Morgan thought he was hot, and then I was like running around trying to find. Nick also says he's hot and says it's unfair for me to think that Cillian Murphy is hot if I don't think Buster Keaton is hot, or Rami Malek. And he actually does look freakishly like Rami Malek. Rami Malek looks freakishly like him. I had never really thought about it.
I think he was supposed to play him in a movie at some point. I think that was, I don't know if that's still happening, but I have vague memories of that.
But that said, he just doesn't do it for me. Either way, obviously, like, you know, whatever. We watched 1 Week in The Cook, which were two I hadn't seen before, and, you know, they were fun. And then Morgan and I went to go see Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret.
I keep hearing great things about that one. In my total ignorance of the book or anything about it, I knew they were making a movie, and I just, it was not on my radar. It wasn't something that even occurred to me as, like, maybe that would be interesting. But I keep seeing people tweet about how great it is, so.
Yeah, no, it's really good. I think you might like it. Of course, I know, obviously, you didn't read the book growing up. I started reading the book, and Mom picked it up and looked at it and stopped me from reading the book. But I have read it as an adult, and it's very good.
I was under the impression that the book was some kind of, like, shitty religious self-help book, if I'm being totally honest, just based on the name. That's what I had always assumed it was.
But Judy Blume.
I know that name. I wouldn't have connected it to the title of the book. I don't know anything about it.
Wow, this is what happens when you grow up a cis dude. Judy Blume.
The worst consequence of that.
Judy Blume is a fucking icon, who has always been, like, people have tried to ban her books and have intermittently over the years. I don't think she, like, Are You There, God? Is Me, Margaret was, I think the character in that is 12. But she also wrote a book. There was one that was like a big deal that came out in like the late 90s where she actually wrote a teenage girl losing her virginity, which was a big deal. But she's like one of the biggest YA authors for girls, quote unquote, and has, I think, really done some really amazing stuff. And it's a great book. And when I reread it as an adult, I was really fucking impressed with it. And the movie is really, really good. It's just really lovely. So then the next day I woke up and I was like, I don't feel good. And so I took the day off to be sick. And then I went and I looked at my Hulu and I was like, is anything expiring? And there were two things that were expiring. So I got to the first one, which was this movie called Premature. It was from 2019. I don't know if you have heard of this.
The title rings a bell.
It is about sort of this young Black couple, like this girl's about to leave for college. She has this last summer before she leaves for college. She meets this guy. They sort of fall for each other. There's, you know, it's a very like laid back middle of the city romance sort of thing. I thought it was really nice. It was very lovely. I didn't like adore it, but it was, the acting was good. It was like a nice, very small little story. And then Morgan went climbing and I was like, still not feeling good. What should I watch? And so I watched Marc Maron's special because I had just kind of been meaning to watch that. As we've previously discussed, I don't necessarily have the like attachment to Maron that Joel does, but I do like him. And I thought it was good. I thought it was fine. I enjoyed it. And then Morgan came back and we watched the new Mae Martin special, which I liked quite a lot.
I don't know who that is. That doesn't ring a bell.
Really? You don't remember? She, they had a show on Netflix a couple years ago called Feel Good, I think is what it was called. Really fantastic. They are very funny. Like this one was quite good. I liked it a lot. It's up on Netflix. You should give it a shot and see what you think of them. I enjoy them. And then the next day I was dying for the whole day until finally in the evening I was able to eat 4 saltine crackers, which was very exciting, and take ibuprofen, which eventually got rid of my headache, which made me feel like a little more like a human. So I was like, let's watch something. Hannah Gatsby has a new special. Let's watch Hannah Gatsby new special. Fucking incredible. I thought Douglas was fine. It wasn't as much my thing. And I mean, like, not that it needed to be like Nanette. Nothing is like Nanette, and that's fine. But this one, oh, A+, chef's kiss. Literally shrieked at the end when she pulls things back around. Really, really fucking good. Super recommend it. And then the next morning I was like, okay, I'm feeling somewhat better, whatever. I'm just gonna spend the day watching movies, take one more day off. So I watched the second thing that was expiring off of Hulu, which was The Painter and the Thief. Do you remember this movie from a few years ago?
Yeah, I heard about it on several podcasts that I listened to, but I have not watched it. It seems really interesting. It's an interesting story, but I haven't checked it out.
It is an interesting story. It's about this painter, this German painter who was living in Norway, I think, and some of her paintings got stolen, and they caught the guy who did it, who was like high and, you know, junky, and she ends up forming this relationship with this guy and painting him, and it is an interesting story. I did enjoy it, and I recommend it. So then I was looking at things that were expiring on Criterion, and Morgan and I were watching things, and we watched a movie that I had never heard of called Spettacolo.
Sounds Italian. That's my whole commentary. I don't know.
Excellent. It is a documentary by the same guys who did the Marwan Call documentary. It's their second documentary. And it is about this little town in Italy that 40 years ago, or 60, it was like in the 50s, I think. So more than that. years ago. They had put together like a playhouse where they were putting on plays and they ended up deciding that they didn't want to put on these plays about olden times or whatever anymore. They wanted to put on a play about their town.
Okay, I have heard about this. I remember hearing about this when it came out. Yeah.
And now it has been 50 years. They're on their 50th year anniversary. And you know, it's a very small town. People are leaving. This might be the last one. So we watch it. Now, there were times that I wish the focus had been on a few other things. Like, I spent time in the movie being like, I think I would have focused on this differently. But that's not like a fair critique of the movie. That's just like what interested me. It is definitely interesting. Looking it up, it appears that was not their last time. They still do it. So, although maybe it looks different now. But anyway, that was up on Criterion. Also,
it could also be that the documentary is part of why it's still going. I mean, you know, brought some attention back to it.
For sure. And then I watched The Big Bad Fox and Other Tales, which is a cartoon by the same guy who did, or the same people who did, the Bear and the Fox cartoon, Celine and something or whatever. It was a movie that came out a few years ago. Very sweet, soft animation. It was nice. Yeah, whatever. I was sick. It was cute. And then Morgan came back, and we went back into the expiring things in Criterion, and we watched 1 Hour with You, a Lubitsch film with no one that I'm like super familiar with, but it was fun, as you would expect a Lubitsch film to be. Had a good time. And then we watched Bong Joon-ho's student film short film called Incoherence. It's 30 minutes. It's up on Criterion right now. You could definitely tell that it was like a very early film, but you could also sort of like see the start of some of his like stuff. So it was kind of cool. And then we watched Honor Among Lovers, which was a 1931 Dorothy Arzner film. Super fun. This is like the third or fourth film of hers I've watched. She was so good. It's crazy how much more her female characters feel like females, like actual people, in spite, like, even while they're still surrounded by all of these like cultural tropes that are kind of like obnoxious or like, this is pretty toxic and shitty, but like still like the people feel more like people, you know? It's just crazy. I don't know if you've watched any of her stuff.
I haven't. I know she's been having a kind of a revival over the last couple of years, and a bunch of her stuff has been made available, but I haven't caught up with any of it.
Anyway, so that was very fun. Eric and I watched 56 Up, which leaves only 63, which is the only one I haven't seen yet. And then Eric and I watched the new John Mulaney stand-up.
I haven't watched that one yet, but I've heard mixed things.
I think that if John Mulaney makes another show about this in 10 years, it will probably be great.
Right, because it's largely about his rehab experience or alcoholism thing, right?
It is entirely about his alcoholism and rehab experience, which is fine. No hate per se for that. I don't care about that. This is part of the thing, is that it felt like, you know, he was like kind of trying to like come out and address like, you know, John Mulaney being canceled and stuff. And I'm like, look, I know that I'm in very specific circles, but the reason that the people I know are upset with John Mulaney is not because he fucked over his wife or was an addict, but because he brought Dave fucking Chappelle on stage and made to make transphobic jokes as a surprise guest at his show. Weirdly, he doesn't mention that at all. But like, even if we're taking that out of it, I'm not saying we should, but even if we were, I think he's just way too fucking close to this material at this point. It's not Like, it just, it feels like a mess. And honestly, especially after having just watched Hannah Gadsby's new one, which is so tight and like so well put together, this feels like a chaotic mess to me. It just doesn't feel like he had, like, maybe there was pressure on him to like get it out sooner for, like, I don't know. But it just, it, I did not think it was good. I think I laughed maybe once. Like, it was pretty, yeah. And then yesterday, Morgan and I went on to watch our next Criterion film, which was the 1942 Jungle Book by Zoltan Korda, where they had real animals for most of the animals. It's not that good, though. Like, it's in Technicolor, so it looks really pretty, which kept me engaged for about half the movie. And then, like, and then it was just kind of boring. So then I was like, we need to go watch the cartoon Jungle Book, because, like, with the caveat that there are all of the issues that are definitely of racisms that are honestly just pretty baked into the fucking premise. The cartoon is so delightful in so many ways. And so we watched that. And then last night we watched Planet of the Apes, because Blake Check is also doing Planet of the Apes.
You'd seen the original one before, right?
Yes, I saw it one time, I think, with you guys. I think I was probably 20 or younger. It had been so many years since I watched it. And it was funny. I didn't remember all of the, like Morgan and I had a whole conversation afterwards, because Morgan was like, well, wait, like, how would you have perceived this at 20? Because, like, it's all this stuff about religion being, you know, all of these things. And I'm just like, well, I mean, so I was like trying to explain to him the way that you just sort of like it was like a whole thing. And I think that I was more attracted to Charlton Heston when I was younger. And now I'm just like, my God, this dude is such a piece of shit. But to be clear, that doesn't take away from the movie in any way. Like, the movie is still fine, even if he is a piece of shit.
Heston's a monster, or was, but he was also like, no one has ever done righteous outrage the way that Heston did it on screen. And, Planet of the Apes has room for a lot of that. I love the original Planet of the Apes. It's fantastic. I love it.
Yeah, to be clear, it's a great fucking movie. Again, with the set design, the production design, just incredible. Regardless of what I think about Heston as a character, like, listening to him talk is like an enjoyable experience. So, you know, I mean, I was really glad. And they're doing the whole series. I've never seen any except for the first one. So I think we're going to watch all of them. And then I might push Morgan to watch the new series too while we're... And I guess at that point, we have to watch the fucking Mark Wahlberg one that I haven't seen since theaters either.
Yeah, I've seen the second of the older Planet of the Apes, which was a pretty cool movie from what I remember, but I haven't seen the others, even though I actually own a box set of all five or six or however many there are, but I have not watched any of the other sequels as of yet.
Can we borrow your box set?
Sure.
Cool. Anyway, so that's all of my movies.
Oh, okay. I'm up here. Okay. Let's see. We talked about Mean Streets. I watched Mad Max Fury Road again because it had been a while and it had been a long week and I needed a fun movie. And that's still like the best movie to come out in the last decade, but I've talked about it on here like three times already. So, I watched, the 1978 movie Magic. Have you ever seen that movie with, Anthony Hopkins? As Richard Attenborough directed it. It was,
This rings no bells.
It's kind of a horror movie. It's based on a William Goldman novel. Of course, William Goldman wrote a screenplay for Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, which is my favorite movie of all time. And he also wrote the novel and the screenplay of The Princess Bride. I can't remember if he wrote the screenplay for this movie, but he wrote the novel that it's based on. It's about a ventriloquist performer played by Anthony Hopkins who... is crazy, I guess, or possibly his puppet is magic or something. It's a little unclear for most of the movie what exactly is going on. It's not like a great movie, but it's a very interesting movie. Hopkins is really good. And it's a weird role to see him in because, you know, this is like before he, obviously this is long before Silence of the Lambs. And, this was before Richard Attenborough had his big thing with Gandhi where he won his Oscar. And, it has, Burgess Meredith. This was right after his Oscar winning performance in Rocky. He plays like his manager. He's discovered this unique talent in this ventriloquist guy, and he's going to make him like a world superstar, which seems a little Even, yeah, that always feels a little flimsy. He's convinced that he's going to, like, make a TV show around him and stuff, which I don't know if that was actually something that could maybe have happened in the 70s, but at any rate, it's a fun movie, and it's on Shudder, I believe, is where I watched it. Then I went to see Dungeons & Dragons Honor Among Thieves.
Did you like it?
I loved it. It was so much fun. I've talked before about Chris Pine and my mixed feelings about him, but I think I'm finally coming around. I really liked him in this. It's basically a heist movie, which is like a formula that I always love and can basically be adapted to any genre. And I don't know why more people don't do that, but there's a lot of really cool stuff with that. A lot of really fun characters. I know just enough about D&D gameplay and stuff that I felt like I was able to follow pretty much all of the... I'm curious how someone who knows nothing at all about D&D would... if they would have trouble following some of it, maybe.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like... like, yes, I probably know more than your average bear just because of who I keep surrounding myself with. But, like, I'm pretty, like, consistent about refusing to know things about Dungeons & Dragons. I didn't really have any trouble following it. From what it felt like to me, it seems like if you are... like super into D&D, then there's a shit ton of Easter eggs in there for you. But I think it works pretty well without it.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm sure that was kind of the ground they were aiming for. There were definitely a couple of things. Now I'm having trouble remembering specifics, but I definitely remember a couple of things thinking as I was watching. I'm like, okay, I know what that is because I listened to a D&D podcast that had, you know, like a narrative thing that was... DM'd by one of the hosts of the film cast, and which is why I started listening to it, and he's a really good storyteller. It was really good, but I listened to that for like a long time, which is why I know stuff about the gameplay mechanics and stuff, and the world, the mythology of it. But I can't remember any specifics now, but I remember a couple of things happening in the movie where I was like, okay, I get that because I'm familiar enough to understand what they're talking about here, but I don't know that a complete newbie would understand what's happening.
I was going to say, like, in terms of some of the stuff that happened, like, I mean, like, there are things in the movie that I feel like I know because, like, the gelatinous cube, I know what a gelatinous cube is. I know, I love owlbears. There's a game that Eric, there's, like, a card game that Eric likes. Ooh, I should have him bring that today. Anyway, there's, like, a card game that Eric likes that one of the things in the cards is owlbears, and I almost always lose this one partly because I'm just always determined to collect all the owlbears because I think they're so cute. I can't remember what the other creature was in this one that I desperately wanted as a pet. There was another one, but anyway, no, I mean, I think they did a really phenomenal job making a movie that, like, I suspect would appeal to most people, could get, like, kids into D&D who didn't necessarily before. Love to see Michelle out there as a barbarian or whatever, killing it. Her and Chris Pine had really great energy. Love to see the alternative family structure that has no romance whatsoever between the two of them, but like taking care of this kid. Love that.
Yeah. Only real criticism of the movie, honestly, is the like the real blatant fridging that goes on in the beginning of the, like, that's, you know, that's like the kind of what the whole structure is based on with for a character. I think his wife literally doesn't speak in the movie. Like, she appears several times, but I don't remember her having a line of dialogue. She's certainly not before she's killed. There's some like flashback stuff.
She does have a few lines, but yeah, she doesn't have a ton of dialogue.
At any rate, that's it works pretty well as a plot setup, I think, and it's all revealed in a very funny way with Chris Pine kind of telling the story, and that whole thing was great. It's so funny. There's so many good jokes built into it and stuff. I would love to see more of these movies, honestly. I would love to see them do a couple sequels to this. I don't know if that's going to happen because I think it was not exactly a smash hit. I don't think it's been doing badly. And I think it's been like, you know, people like it, so it's still playing, but it was not like a massive hit.
Well, that's interesting. We went to go see it 2 weeks after, and the theater was full. Like, it was, which has not been happening much, so I don't know.
When I went to see it, I went to see it on a Saturday afternoon, and I think there were three other people in the theater, so I don't know, but I think it's made, like, $100 million-ish domestic, so we'll see. I mean, it'll probably, it is, you know, it's a fun enough movie that I'm sure people will keep discovering it, but that doesn't necessarily mean it'll get a sequel. We'll see. I hope it does. I would like to see more. And also at this point, I think I will watch pretty much anything that John Francis Daly and Jonathan Goldstein do, because they also did Game Night, which is one of my favorite comedies from the last several years. So let's see. Then it was Star Wars Day last week. So I watched Rogue One, largely because May hadn't seen that one. And, you know, it's interesting. This is the first time I'd watched it since watching Andor, which you have not watched yet. Okay. and I've talked about Andor in here. There's all sorts of stuff in Andor that is like the aspects of the Star Wars universe that the movies have never gotten into and that are so fascinating, like how the Empire actually functions as a government and like all kinds of stuff that I find really fascinating. And there's more of that in Rogue One than I remembered, because of course Rogue One is also co-written by Tony Gilroy. I think they had like a finished movie that they decided was terrible and they brought in Tony Gilroy to fix it, I think is how it went down. And there are definitely still signs of that. Like there are plot threads that don't really go anywhere and characters that kind of disappear for no real reason. So it doesn't entirely hold together as a movie, which is unfortunate, but there's so much good stuff in it that, I liked it quite a bit more this time than I remembered liking it the first time. let's see. I don't have too many more here. Oh, I went to see Showing Up. Didn't you say you went to see that? You didn't mention it.
We were going to go see it yesterday, but I was still like exhausted when I walked into the kitchen. So it felt like maybe it was not the time. I'm super bummed. I think we're probably going to miss it in theaters now and I won't get to see it till it comes streaming. But yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. Kelly Reichardt's new movie, who I love Kelly Reichardt. She's Certain Women was one of my favorite movies of that year when it came out. So I was really excited about this one. It's really good. It's probably her, like, I don't know if it's her only straight up comedy, but I would say it's the funniest of her movies. Michelle Williams is in it, who's been in several of her movies. Hong Chau is in it, who's really having a moment over the last couple of years, and she's great in it. And it's about this woman who's a sculptor, an artist, kind of preparing for a show. And I feel like it portrays artists and making art in a way that I don't think I've ever actually seen in a movie before. And that felt much more realistic as like a, 'cause usually when you see the creation of art in movies, it's shown as like this revelatory act and you get like the, you know, the moment of inspiration and the breakthrough and the inspiring music and all that. And this is just like, it's like a mechanical job that she does in her garage where she's just putting together these really cool like ceramic statues. And then they have to go through a kiln, which someone else controls. And sometimes they don't come out the way she wanted them to. And like, all, like, you know, she has to know how to use like power tools to mount them and all this, like all the aspects of this kind of stuff that I don't think I've ever seen portrayed in a movie before. It was really interesting. So yeah, I really liked it. And then last night I watched Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. 'Cause again, it had been a really long week and I needed a fun movie. but I have also talked about that one multiple times on here before, I think, so probably don't need to go into that again. But that's all I have as far as movies. Do you want to do TV this time? Because I know we skipped it last time.
Yeah, there's some great stuff out right now.
I mean, obviously, I assume you're also caught up on Succession, I assume.
Yes.
At this point, I think there's only three episodes left this season, right? Because we just had episode 7. Has it been long enough now? Can we talk about episode 3, like, without worrying about spoilers? It's been like 5 weeks now, and I feel like everyone had it spoiled for them the night it aired anyway. Not everyone, because I managed to avoid it. But from what I hear, a lot of people had it spoiled for them right away.
Yeah, I fucking didn't. I was in North Carolina, and me and Morgan and Eric watched it together. Or not North Carolina, New York. Me and Morgan and Eric watched it together, so we were not watching it that week, and I fucking had it spoiled, but Eric and Morgan didn't. I guess, I don't know, spoilers for Succession, skip several minutes forward if this bothers you, but yeah, we should talk about it.
I mean, I assume probably the same experience for you. I basically just sobbed my way through episode 3. Like, episode 3 is basically like, it is a scenario that I regularly think about and dread playing out in my life, portrayed incredibly well. Like, so well. One of the best episodes of TV I've ever seen, I think. But yeah, rough watch, but it's so good. And what an interesting choice to have the death of Logan occur so early in the season and have so much of the season be about the fallout from that. I was not expecting that at all. And from what I gather, neither was anyone else. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I too worry that our billionaire parents will die and leave us.
Yeah, okay, you know, when one of us gets that call, we will not be on, like, a private cruise ship for our half-brother's fancy wedding slash campaign event. But, you know what I mean, you know what I'm talking about.
I do. We won't have to worry about making a public press statement. Yeah, I don't know if anyone would call me, but regardless, that's neither here nor there. We can talk about that not on the podcast. I think that really it was so interesting because I was super behind on listening to Decoding TV, David Chen's podcast, where he's talking with Kim, who's the same person who did the House of Dragons episodes with him. I fucking love her, and the two of them are great. And if y'all aren't listening to Decoding TV, you should.
Yeah, I've been listening to their Succession stuff. She's really good.
Yeah. So I was behind. So I was like listening to episode two, and we were on like to like episode four, and like listening to them talk about episode two and be like, man, it really feels like they're retreading some ground, like all, which was totally valid. And then it's like, I was like, no, that was on purpose. This was on purpose doing this. And I think that the episode really captures in a way that I have very rarely seen. You know, there's a handful of death episodes that are like incredibly memorable. You know, the body in Buffy, obviously. I can't remember the name of it, but the episode in The Good Wife. I feel like they really managed to nail this sense of like where it felt like they were building other things. You know, it felt like he's gonna dive in on this ATN stuff. He's gonna do this stuff, and it's like. Yeah, because nobody's actually planning to die most of the time, especially not a guy like Logan Roy, right? And like at the end of the day, he dies on the fucking toilet with his kids not talking to him, not going to his son's wedding.
Yeah, dies off screen. Like we don't. There. Apparently, for a long time, there were theories that he wasn't actually dead because so little of it is shown. They do really interesting stuff in this season with like what things they actually show you and what they don't. But particularly effective in that episode, I think.
And watching all three of these children be put in, I mean, not children, but, you know, adult children be put in this position of like, this is the last thing your dad's ever going to hear from you. Also, probably he's not hearing it, but like, what if he does? And like, how do you say it? And like watching Roman, like, just like not even be able to pretend like, and I feel like I get that. I'm just like, look, there's no fucking way I'm giving you absolution on your death. And that's not bitterness on my part. It truly isn't. It would just be a lie. And I don't, and I'm the one who has to live with it, not you. And so I think watching them and no one even fucking thought to call Connor.
Yeah, that was in the back of my head the whole time. And like, I mean, it took them a long time to think to bring Shiv in. Like that's, and that is, as the season has played out, like, you know, the end of season three, we finally had like the siblings have joined forces. They've finally all gotten on the same page and stopped trying to get behind each other's backs. And they're going to go up against dad. And he just completely clotheslines them and like just wipes them out. But we start back with this season. They're all like, OK, we're still a unit. We're going to do our own thing. We don't need him. We, you know, we've still got all this money and all this influence. We can do our own thing. And then he dies. And within a day, because this season is basically one day per episode, all of them are like, okay, well, we have to do it the way dad would have done it. And we have to, you know, that's how, at least, particularly with the boys, but that is how they're doing everything now. And you can watch them, like, all of their progress just, like, sliding down the drain. And they're going behind each other's backs again. And they're cutting Shiv out. And, all, like, just immediately, they're all... Well, that's the way dad would have done it. So obviously that's the way it needs to be done. Even though they were all united in this, we're going to do our own thing. We don't want to do things the way dad would have done it. But immediately they're all back to, we have to do it the way dad would have done it. And you have to respect me doing it because this is the way dad would have done it.
I mean, it turns out you need a lot more therapy. But like, but also I think that one thing, because obviously everything got so eclipsed by episode three, which makes sense. But I spend a lot of time thinking about Logan's conversation with the kids at the end of episode two that honestly I didn't even feel like Dave and Kim like like, if I had been listening to it at a normal time, I would have written an email. But as it was, I was so far behind that it doesn't matter. But, like, this is the only show that I ever write emails to, by the way, where I'm just like, no, I want to be in on the conversation. Anyway, but where, like, he comes in, and in, like, 5 minutes, he plays all three of them fucking perfectly. They all come out of that thinking that something different has happened. They all come out of that, like, of course Roman goes out and he calls him immediately. Of course Kendall, like, they all, like, he said exactly the worst thing to all three of them with, like, no effort whatsoever. It was one of the most, like, breathtaking, like, scenes of manipulation I've ever seen. Where, because the truth is that, like, yeah, I think that part of this is due to his death and has been fast-tracked because of it. But it was all going to fall apart from that second.
I mean, absolutely. It was all... their whole, like, united front, joined together thing was always a facade that was never going to last. Like, in the end, it wouldn't have mattered. It all would have fallen apart. But it has been fascinating to see how quickly it has all fallen apart.
I also don't even know that I would call it a facade. I think they're genuine. They don't have the skills to build it up. Like, they...
It's been interesting to see Roman as the one who is most invested in maintaining it. Roman, who has been, like, the carefully structured distance that he has with everyone in his life through the whole show. He's probably my favorite character. I really like Roman, but it's been interesting to see him as the one trying to be, like, the peacekeeper and, like, holding all the threads together to some degree. I mean, he's also doing his own, like, his own shit, but yeah, really great. I mean, all the performances are great. Some of the best acting on TV right now or possibly ever, but he's probably my favorite.
Emmys for everyone. But no, Kieran Culkin is truly doing just unbelievable work. He has been every season and continues to do unbelievable work. And I do think, like, it speaks so much to, again, what we know about Roman. That, yes, he has had this he's had this constructed distance, but it's never been very good. Like, it's always just been like, and like, it, to me, it has always been clear that Roman, more than Shiv and Kendall in a lot of ways, is, like, very aware of, like, his desperate desire. Like, he wants this to work. He wants this to be a thing. And I don't even think Shiv and Kendall are together and are, like, together enough in their brains to understand that that's something they need. I feel like Roman is aware of that need and is, like, resentful of it, but, like, does feel it. Let's not forget Shiv and Tom in this last episode. Just some of the scenes between these people, it's just it's awe-inspiring. I don't know how, like, it's incredible.
Yeah. I'm sure we'll talk more about it. Maybe not next time we record, but at some point after it ends, because this is the final season, right? So we've got three episodes left, and I'm fully expecting great things with the ending. I have no idea how it's going to play out. I assume we got the election in the next episode, so I assume the funeral's going to be the big event at the end of the season, but we'll see, I guess. I watched season two of Perry Mason. Have you been watching that at all?
I haven't had the time. I do plan to watch it. Should I watch it?
I hadn't even heard they were doing a season two. I hadn't heard anything about it. And then I opened HBO like a month or two ago and saw that there were a few new episodes of a new season. And I had kind of mixed feelings about the first season.
Same.
But I liked it well enough that I decided to check this one out. And I did like this season better. I do find the whole, like, there have been a few, like, really sort of landmark movies about this period of LA and specifically about crime in this period of LA and how the city was actually, like, put together and the corruption underneath it. Obviously Chinatown is, and LA Confidential are the two big ones that come to mind for me. There might be others, but that's very much what this season is about. There's a whole thing with the central case of the season is this guy, like, this rich guy who had been working to bring a Major League Baseball team to Los Angeles and has started construction on a stadium and all this. He gets murdered at the start of the season, and that's the sort of central case. But of course there's, like, layers and layers of, like, organized crime and corruption underneath all of that. And it is really interesting. I was really into this season. I liked it a lot. So I think, yeah, I would recommend checking it out. I'm blanking on, what's that guy's name who plays Perry in this show? Reese something? Something Reese? I'm blanking on his name. But he was in The Americans. He's great. And it has the guy who, I think he won an Oscar for, I can't remember the name of anything right now.
Matthew Reese is his name.
Matthew Reese, yes. There was the guy who, I think he won a Best Supporting Actor Oscar for The Sound of Metal. He was the like the guy who ran the deaf community that he went to for a while.
I still haven't watched that.
Oh, okay. I think his name is Paul something. At any rate, he's in this season too. He's really good. A lot of really good stuff.
So, Paul Racy.
That's the one. Yeah. Let's see, what else have I been doing? May and I have started we've been doing the new season of Maisel, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, which is a show that I'm like increasingly mixed on as it goes along. I found the last season almost entirely frustrating because I thought that basically everything that Midge was doing through the whole season was stupid and terrible. But then the end of the season, the conclusion of it was kind of her realizing, oh, I've been doing everything stupid and terribly, and I need to start doing things differently. So I guess it was intentional. I think this season I'm enjoying this season a little more. I think I've only watched the first two episodes. But this is the final season of that as well. And also the last season of Ted Lasso, which mm-hmm. I'm also having increasingly mixed feelings about. I think I've only watched the first three episodes or four episodes of it so far. I'm at least an episode or two behind, but I still really enjoy the character of Ted, and like there's things going on that I really like, but there's also things going on that I really don't like so much. I really don't like the whole thing with what's his name becoming the head coach for the bad guys, Nate, right? I felt like that plot twist came out of nowhere at the end of the second season, and it still doesn't make any sense with his character as far as I can tell. So I'm really not into that. The whole thing with the superstar player that they brought in this season to be like the new character and then wrote out halfway through the season seems weird. I don't know. There's a lot of weird choices going on that I don't love.
I think it's very meandering. I am caught up at this point. For the most part, I feel like for me, I'm like, I really like most of these characters and I'm happy to watch them sort of meander about and do their things. And it doesn't particularly bother me. The one thing that I cannot get past, and I am not convinced that they're going to meaningfully deal with it, is that Ted's ex-wife's new boyfriend is their fucking former couples counselor.
Yeah. When they first introduced that, I was like, okay, so this is going to be like a big thing. And then I feel like they're like, we had a conversation with Ted and his ex-wife in like a couple episodes later where it doesn't even come up. Like, they're just not talking about it. It's weird.
It's weird. It's, but, and like, I mean, this is a particular thing for me, but like, just generally, I hate stuff with therapists dating their patients. It's just, it's beyond unethical. Like, it's not. And we had a fairly huge blow up divorce at our church and we were crying out because you can't fucking, it's just, it's so fucked up. And I can't deal with the fact that the show just doesn't seem to be like it didn't have to be the, like, why? I don't know.
Right. Just having it be someone that Ted knew and that he didn't know they were dating, like, that's drama enough. I don't feel like there's any reason for it to have been their therapist. And yeah, it doesn't seem like they're doing anything with it. It's weird.
Yeah, no, I hate that. The rest of it, it's fine. I mean, like, it's kind of meandering as a season, but I also kind of felt that way about the last one, so whatever. But, you know, I'm happy to see these people. I'm not sure how I feel either about Nate and this girl that he's into. I don't really love a lot of that stuff, but I enjoy watching Anthony Head be like, he's so slimy. Like, he's so slimy. It's just incredible.
I mean, yeah, he's fun. He's a fun villain. And they're, yeah, they're like, I really like Roy as a character. I really like Keeley. Like, there's a lot of, that's why I'm still watching it, even though I'm increasingly unimpressed with the plot choices the show is making. I really like a lot of the characters and the
Rebecca's amazing.
Yeah, Rebecca's great. Let's see. The only other thing I can think of is yesterday I watched the first episode of the new Muppets. Have you heard about the new Muppets? It's called Muppet Mayhem, I think. It is a show about Dr. Teeth and the Electric Mayhem, who are the band that show up in the Muppet things, right? So it's a... The premise is that they're this, like, legendary band that has been on this nonstop tour for decades, and, like, every big musician was, like, massively influenced by them. So, of course, there's, like, fun cameos with that, where you have, like, actual musicians being interviewed about them or whatever. But they've never recorded an album. That's the idea. And so the main character is this woman who's, like, a low-level assistant at this, like, dying record label, who discovers that decades ago they had signed a contract with the Electric Mayhem to record an album, and they still owe them an album. So she goes to convince them to record an album to revive this record label. So that's kind of the premise of the show. We watched the first episode and it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. So I'm excited to watch more of it. I'm a big Muppets fan in general. But yeah, it's fun. It's a fun premise. A lot of, like, you know, good rock and roll stuff going on. Yeah. I recommend it. I think the whole thing is up on Disney Plus. I think they just put the whole thing up.
Now that you say that, I have a dim memory there was supposed to be a show about that, but I didn't know it had come out. That's so exciting. I didn't. I will have to take a look at that. I have been watching a fair amount of television. So we've covered some of the big ones, Ted Lasso and whatever. Barry, are you watching the final season of Barry?
Oh, I watched the first two episodes of the last season of Barry yesterday morning. I finally got around to, because I had started on Perry Mason before Barry started, and so I wanted to finish that first. So yeah, I think I'm like three episodes behind still, but the first two episodes were great. And that is also the final season, right? Everything's wrapping up. But yeah, I'm very excited to see where that show goes, because the last season was fucking nuts. That show just keeps getting better and better. And the first couple episodes were great.
Honestly, I'm so relieved that a lot of these shows are wrapping up, because it means that some of the best shows on television these last few years are not going to be harmed by the writer's strike. To be clear, fully support the writer's strike, but, you know, we got some bad shit out of that last time. I finished Beef. It was a really good show, with the caveat that apparently the dude is a fucking creep and the entire cast refused to speak out against it. So I don't really know where I land on that at the end of the day.
Yeah, that was one that I was excited about, and I hadn't gotten around to starting it when the whole thing came out, and now I'm kind of mixed about whether I should. I don't know.
Yeah, no, that's fair. The thing came out when we were halfway through it, so I was like, well, Morgan and I have been watching Love and Death, the new...
That I want to watch that one just because of the cast. I don't give a shit about the premise. It's exactly the kind of thing that I don't usually watch, but I love both of the two leads enough that I want to watch it. I just haven't got to it yet.
And of course, it is exactly the kind of thing that I do usually watch, but also truly some just A+ phenomenal acting from Elizabeth Olsen. I mean, she's always great, but, like, it's super good. It's been a good show. We also have been watching White House Plumbers, that has been coming out on HBO, which is fine.
I haven't really heard anything about that. Like, I've seen a couple ads for it. You know, I like the leads. The premise is interesting. I'm kind of curious, but I haven't really heard much about it.
It's been fine. I don't know. I just haven't been crazy about it. I have been watching, finally gotten around to one of those shows that people talk about constantly, that people I like talk about constantly as one of the great shows that got cut down in its prime, which is Enlightened on HBO, the Mike White Show.
Never saw that one. Yeah.
So I've been watching that, and I've been enjoying it. I'm not sure I'm quite too. This was a masterpiece that, you know, we were robbed of or whatever, but I did enjoy it. I don't know. The season of Abbott Elementary has been super great. I mean, it always has been, so that's not like a shocking new thing. I haven't gotten to it yet, but I don't know if you saw that season 3 of The Great has dropped.
I never finished season 2.
Joel!
I know. I have no real excuse. I think I watched the first 2 or 3 episodes. I don't know if you remember... It took me forever to get through season 1 of that show for some reason. Like, I watched the first couple episodes and I loved it, and then it just dropped off and I was watching other stuff, and then eventually I came back to it and finished the season really quickly. And then, the second season came out, I was really excited. I think I only watched 2 episodes and then I just dropped off and I haven't watched any more of it. So one of these days, in fact, maybe it's something that May and I should watch together, because she really likes Nicholas Holt, and it's... I mean, it's such a fun show. I really want to watch the rest of it. I have not gotten to it.
Yeah, I think you should try watching it with May and see that, because I want to watch it with Morgan. I probably won't get to season 3 until we do that. But, like, I saw it come out. Anyway, I think that covers, like, the important stuff that I've, the important shows that I've been watching. So I think that's enough, probably.
Have you been watching, real quick, have you been watching the season of Bob's Burgers?
Yes.
The last episode of Bob's Burgers was a very interesting thing that was unlike any thing they'd done before. It was like a mystery. It was Bob telling his family this like family story about his grandmother or his great aunt or something who had discovered a Nazi spy in her neighborhood. And like it was interesting. It didn't have a lot of jokes in it. It was kind of strange. It was an interesting experiment for the show, but I liked it. It was cool.
Yeah, I kind of forgot about that. But yeah, I've been watching it. I thought that was an interesting episode. It's felt like they've had more like background and stuff than they used to have. I think they probably got, I don't know exactly how it works, but I feel like when they made the movie, they got to have a whole bunch of backgrounds and they get to like use some of them now. Oh, just
in terms of the animation, you mean? Yeah, no, I think so. I think they have a new set of tools now after the movie, yeah.
I feel like I've noticed that this season, which is kind of cool. But anyway, so I think that's probably enough. My voice is going to give out here. So we will be back in a few weeks. I'm not making a promise, but in a few weeks we will be back and we will talk about The Mission.
Sounds great. Okay, bye everyone.
Bye.